Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
We've got John McClain coming up this hour. First, though, a bit of a show announcement. We teased it last week. We asked for it, and they said yes. Taylor Lewan and Will Compton of Bussin' with the Boys that got the now famous quote out of Mike Vrabel will co-host with me tomorrow, 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. So we will open the show tomorrow with Taylor Lewan and Will Compton, the Bussin' with the Boys, Bussin' with the Midday 180. That's what's going to be a crossover event tomorrow, 10 to 11 a.m. Taylor Lewan and Will Compton will join us. John McClain joining us now from Houston. Of course, he's with the Houston Chronicle. Phone lines are open, by the way. Whatever NFL story you want to talk about, and there are plenty of them out there, we can discuss it with John McClain. 615-737-1045, 737-1045. John, how are you?
I'm doing great. Chad, how are you?
Doing well. Well, looking forward to having Taylor Lewan and Will Compton in studio. Hopefully they won't get me to admit something that I would cut off in order for a team to win a championship. That's my goal tomorrow.
Well, because of that quote from Vrabel, every show I do, they've been asking me, what would you want to happen to do what Mike Vrabel said he would do? And I thought, well, I think I told you those guys on Friday. At my age, considering how little I use it, they wouldn't be real hard for me to find something.
Absolutely. It's so funny, John, too, because Jen Vrabel is now in on the joke also on Twitter. And I feel like most people understand it's a joke and it's sort of died down, but you occasionally get the person who's outraged by it. But it's really been few and far between, which I think is cool to see that people are taking it for the joke that it was intended to be.
I can't imagine anybody would take that for anything but what it is. Of course, it's an example of Vrabel saying how bad he wants to win. You know, he wants to win really bad. He knows what it takes to get to the Super Bowl because he's got multiple Super Bowl rings. And it just makes the season that much more interesting.
John, I want to ask you about a different Mike Vrabel quote. He was talking with SI. And he said that with Marcus Mariota and the decision that he's looking at the next 7 to 10 years, and the organization is with their quarterback situation, and that's why they have not committed past this upcoming season. Now it's Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota, the only two quarterbacks since this new fifth-year system came into existence, that they did not get the extension to play out their fifth year without the extension. It says a lot about the two situations those quarterbacks are in. It says a lot also about Marcus Mariota and his injury history, which I'm sure is what the Titans are going to be monitoring this year.
Both of those players and Vrabel, of course, was new last year. He was not there when Mariota was drafted. Bruce Arians is new at Tampa, and he's not there either. So I think that has a big thing to do with it because most quarterbacks want their players.
615-737-1045. If you want to jump in, 737-1045. John, do you think Ezekiel Elliott is going to eventually hold out with the Cowboys, or will they get this ball rolling downhill so he's there at camp?
He's got 2 years left on his contract. It'd be really stupid of him to pull that. Jerry Jones has got to pay a lot of players big bucks. Somebody's going to get left out. I'm sure Elliott probably thinks it's going to be him. He's coming off a great season. They want a playoff game. They believe they're a Super Bowl contender. But I think it would be very foolish for him to hold out. Maybe him, along with Melvin Gordon, they see what happened with Le'Veon Bell. But they don't understand. Le'Veon Bell did not make back $14.6 million that he sacrificed by holding out. But he also saved the wear and tear on his body in a contract year. So if you're a running back where your position has been devalued, you can do that, but you got to be careful because you never know who playing behind you is going to be good. And he's probably worried about DeMarco Murray, led the NFL in rushing, set a Cowboys record that still stands, and a year later he was gone.
615-737-1045. If you want to talk some football with John McClain, let's go to the phones. Joey, up on line one, is up first for John. Joey, welcome in.
Hey, guys. Hey, John. So I'm going to kind of keep it towards the Cowboys, even though I don't like them, but I'm curious about this, that Jerry Jones has been proclaiming for about 2 years now that Dak is his quarterback, but yet he's going into the last year of his contract, so why hasn't Jerry paid him as his quarterback?
Well, first of all, you don't just – let me ask you, if you're a boss, do you just give your workers anything they want? I don't think so. I don't think there's any boss out there who's just going to say, yeah, here's a blank check. We'll make you the highest paid quarterback in football. Dak Prescott's not the best quarterback in football. He shouldn't be paid more than Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers. He's going to get paid a lot, but he's not going to get paid, I don't think, as the highest paid, especially when they still got to sign Amari Cooper, Ezekiel Elliott, Byron Jones, but by this time next year. So that's why. It's just because he asked for more money. People are like, why in the world wouldn't the Texans sign Savion Clowney? Well, they would if his price was more in line with what they believe he's worth.
John, I think the most overrated thing going with players, and they're in constant pursuit of bulletin board material or something that's going to offend them, that's going to fire them up, and I understand that. But any player who speaks about his Madden rating and being upset with it just gets old. Eric Ebron's the latest with the Colts. He's mad at his 86 rating on Madden because he led the league, led all tight ends with 14 touchdowns a year ago. What do you think when players actually pay attention to their Madden rating?
I think the people at Madden, they love it. It's
so
incredible
true.
Publicity for them. They're probably the ones that's paying these guys to say something because it just brings more attention to Madden. And but I do think it's pretty foolish. It shows if you're that sensitive to criticism about where you are on Madden, imagine what you must feel like if you get criticized for real as a player.
Boy, that is playing chess and not checkers if the people at Madden are actually paying these guys to comment and be outraged about their player rating, that's for sure. Let's go to the phones. We've got some people who want to talk some football with John. You can give us a call as well, 615-737-1045. Let's go to Trace next. Trace, welcome in.
Hey, John, how are you doing today?
I'm great. Trace, how are you?
I'm fine, John. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the new deal that Grady Jarrett got with the Falcons. $68 million for 4 years. What's your opinion on it? Was I thought it was great they got it settled without unnecessary. And also, do you think that Julio Jones is going to get a new deal before the start of the season, or are they just going to shove that to the back burner and let that wait?
I will be shocked if Julio Jones is not signed by the start of the season. He said he would report. He said Arthur Blank guaranteed him they'd get it worked out. He's a man of his word. Now, it doesn't mean they're just going to pay him anything he wants. They got to negotiate. A lot of times you have to compromise. I think Grady Jarrett compromised. Falcons would be fired up. They didn't make the playoffs last year because of the offense, and they've added two new offensive linemen. They think they got a chance to get returned to the playoffs, not do as well. And having Jarrett, who's played one of the best games in a losing effort I've ever seen in a Super Bowl, when they lost to the Patriots. At one point, I was talking about him being the MVP of that game.
Phone lines are open. If you want to talk some football with John McClain, 615-737-1045, 737-1045. We go next to Gary. Gary, welcome in. You're on with John McClain.
Hey, John. And just have you read Charles Haley's book, Fear No Evil?
I have not read it, but I heard all about it because we had him on the radio talking about it at the Super Bowl.
Well, I tell you, please read the chapter about when Jerry Jones picked him up at the airport. I think you would like it and write one of those excellent articles you always write. Yes, sir. Hey, my question is Hall of Fame next year. What are we looking at? How many players? How many coaches? How many, senior contributors and all this, and I'll listen offline.
Thank you very much. The NFL, the Hall of Fame, not the NFL. The Hall of Fame is not controlled by the NFL. The Hall of Fame has not made this official, but there's going to be a centennial class, and I'm all for this. We would have our five modern era finalists. It can be as few as three, but not more than five. It looks like they're going to have 10 seniors to clean up so many players going back to the 20s who deserve to be enshrined in Canton. And I'm all for that. Two coaches. And then I thought the coaches all along should be included among the contributors, and I still do. And then three contributors. One of them, I'm sure, will be the late George Young, general manager of the Giants, five-time executive of the year, promoted Bill Parcells to head coach, won two Super Bowls. George Young will be in there. At any other time, I would thank Bob Kraft, but oh, it's been a tough year for Robert Kraft, and I think we would look really bad putting him in to the Hall of Fame after his Palm Beach episode. And the one I'm hoping gets in among those contributors is Bud Adams, the founder of the Oilers. He moved the team, of course, to Tennessee, but Bud's main contributions to the league came before it was even founded. He was the first person contacted by Lamar Hunt to be his partner to found a new league, the American Football League. They announced it in Bud's office here. Bud traded the rights to Joe Namath to the New York Titans to save the league. There were a couple owners he loaned money to help them stay afloat. He was one of the few owners that had African-American front office executives. At one point, he had three black quarterbacks. He helped sign the first superstar, Billy Cannon, Heisman Trophy winner from LSU. There's all kinds of things Bud Adams did. And we always like to say, can you write the history of the NFL without this person? You cannot write it without Bud Adams. So I'm giving it a big push. I hope it works. And of the two coaches, the one I think deserves it the most is Jimmy Johnson. People say, well, he didn't coach that long. Well, he won two Super Bowls. He set up the third Super Bowl for Barry Switzer, and I don't know of many coaches who've had more control of trades and scouting than Jimmy did, but you don't have to be a Cowboy fan to know what a tremendous job he did, not just as a coach, but as a personnel man overseeing that department.
John, love it when you talk history of the game and giving that history lesson on Bud Adams and people who could be in the Hall of Fame is fascinating. You've been around a lot of training camps also, and I'm sure over the years you have some unbelievable training camp stories. What is the first one that pops to mind when you think about something crazy that happened at a training camp?
Well, Chad, I'm just going to go through some, and you stop me when you've heard enough. Since I'm talking about Bud Adams, my first training camp was 1977. The Oilers trained in Nacogdoches up in East Texas on the campus of Stephen F. Austin. And the first day I got there, their all-pro defensive end, Elvin Bethea, had reported from his holdout, said he wasn't holding out because he just signed a new contract. But the problem was, to get him to sign the contract, Bud Adams had promised him a bunch of cattle and told him he could become a cattleman. And Elvin liked the sound of that. At that point, Elvin was going into his 10th of a 15-year career, and he's in the Hall of Fame. Problem was, he said when he got those cattle, they were malnourished, and he couldn't do anything with them. And the controller, Lad Herzig, who would later be general manager in 1980, said that $80,000 signing bonus you got covers the cost of your feed for your cattle, so you don't get the signing bonus. Needless to say, Elvin Bethea was really upset with Bud Adams. In 1989, they were training in San Angelo, Texas, out in West Texas, on the campus of Angelo State. Bud showed up for his annual State of the Oilers address to the media. And as he was walking up to the dorm, all the workers came out to greet him. And there was this little 12-year-old Hispanic kid who helped the PR, local kid there. And Bud had thought he was their rookie wide receiver from Texas, Herky Walls, went up and introduced himself to Herky and started talking about high hopes for Herky. In practice the next day, Bud was wearing a pith helmet like he's on a safari, and it had fans in the front and the back blowing air on him, and he wore a lime green and black Hawaiian shirt with shorts with white socks pulled up to his knees, and I wrote that he looked like a reject from a bad episode of Hawaii 5-0. And the reason I remember it in 89 is that's the first column I ever wrote, and my wife framed it and put it on the wall in my home office. And I remember one time also in San Angelo, I was on the 10th floor. Media could stay on the 10th floor. Most of them stayed in hotels. I stayed on the 10th floor, and late at night, about 10:15, I think, I hear this commotion on another floor below me, furniture flying, people screaming. I think, man, there's a fight. I run down the stairs. I run down the hallway. Mike Rozier, running back, Heisman Trophy winner from Nebraska, had been somewhere, and the circus was in town, and he met a guy who had a leopard named Cowboy. And he talked that guy into bringing the leopard Cowboy into the dorm.
A leopard named Cowboy.
A leopard.
Okay.
Took him up to the rookie's floor. And at the time, there was one TV in a little lobby area of every floor. Cowboy didn't have his teeth. So he took the muzzle off of him. The elevator door opens. The leopard, scared to death, of course, goes running out that lobby full speed. And you talk about players screaming, jumping, running, climbing on furniture. And I dictated a story by 10:30 p.m. and won an award on deadline short stories in sports for Cowboy the Leopard. I'll never forget that one. And Floyd Reese one time.
These are unbelievable. Let's get to the next story, John, when we come back from break. I could listen to these all day. These are amazing. These are so good, it's like Kirby is making up the story, except it's real when John McClain says it. It's actual truth, unlike when Kirby tells us stories. Incredible. It's the Midday 180 served up by Wendy's here on 104.5 The Zone. John McClain with us for another segment. Phone lines are open. If you want to jump in, 615-737-1045. Love having John McClain with us here each and every week. And we've been going down memory lane a bit with John the last segment or so. John, I cut you off right before you were going to tell another training camp story, I think involving Floyd Reese.
I got one involving Floyd, who, of course, was the first general manager when the Oilers moved to Nashville and became the Titans. Floyd used to get upset because I would get contract numbers. And they had a backup quarterback. Cody Carlson had signed a new deal. It was a real good deal for a backup quarterback. And I had the numbers, and Floyd told me they were wrong. And I said, this was at camp, and we were on the sideline at practice. And I said, Floyd, those numbers aren't wrong. He said, yes, they are. And if you don't believe me, then you just come up to my office after practice, and I'll show you the contract if you keep it between us. I said, well, I don't need to see it because I know I'm right. So I told him, I said, okay, when I'm through with interviews, I'll be up there. So I got up there eventually, I think after lunch. He digs through his file, pulls out the contract, shows me all the numbers, and he was right. I was off. I couldn't believe it. I was so upset. And I talked to the person who had helped me get the contract, and it was his agent, I'll tell you that. And the agent said, you weren't wrong. I gave you the exact numbers. So I went back later during the afternoon practice. I thought Floyd was up there, and his assistant, Linda, said, wow, I've never seen Floyd run as fast as he ran this morning. I said, what are you talking about? She said, he came sprinting back from practice, came in and told me we needed to drop a new contract for Cody Carlson. So just to prove him that he was right and I was wrong, he ran up there after practice, drew up a different contract, put in fake numbers just so I'd fall for it.
Wow.
But I only fell for it for a day.
Pretty impressive, though, just the effort he had to put in to make that happen is crazy. We
used to have so much fun at training camp.
Oh, I bet.
When they went on the road and you were together all the time.
Well, and John, you, I mean, the stories you tell about the old NFL and the personalities and the ability for those personalities to shine, it's just, I know there's a lot of personalities in the league now, but the ability to shine like that and have those stories has really gone away from the game now.
They had more freedom back then. Players, like, training camps were all on the road. The players, the media, the coaches, everybody was together, and there were 6 preseason games. So you're together over 2 months in the summer. And today, it's more about business. You don't get to spend as much time with them. You don't get to go. Like, I could go in Floyd Reese's office and talk to him, go in a coach's office and talk to him. And now if you try to get in a coach or general manager's office, you know, it's like you got machine guns there to want to know what you're doing. And I understand it's a sign of the times, and that's the way it is everywhere. But I miss being able to have the interaction that I had with coaches and general managers back then that I no longer have today.
John, were you able to read the last Peter King column where he interviews Peyton Manning about his new show?
Yeah, I've seen, read everything about that. Peyton was here during the season filming the thing with Watt, and a great story you'll see in that show on ESPN Plus. I wish they're going to put it on ESPN, because I think this is going to be one of the greatest things that's ever been on television. And I understand them wanting to sell ESPN Plus, but it showed one of the things. It shows Peyton in the parking lot of the Astrodome, and he's standing there with a guy wearing something around his waist, hitting him with a flat with a baseball bat. And people wonder, what in the world was that? And that was in 1979. Oilers quarterback Dan Pastorini had a broken rib. He was in the hospital. He was in agony. And a guy walks in his hospital room with a baseball bat. And Pastorini's thinking, oh, this must be some boyfriend or husband. And then another guy walks in, and this guy with the baseball bat starts pounding this other guy in the ribs. And it was the first flak jacket invented by a guy from Houston, an inventor named Byron Donzus, who had no way to get to Pastorini through the Oilers. So they went up to the hospital, found out where he was, took in a flak jacket and a baseball bat, and that's how they showed Pastorini what could help him. And that's how the flak jacket was born. And that is Peyton and Pastorini in the parking lot of the Dome, reenacting that hospital scene from 1979.
Unbelievable. And John, when I read about the show, I think for the hardcore football person out there, there's not going to be any really new material that you don't know about, for instance. And Peyton shared some things that he learned in the making of the series. It's going to be a lot of old stuff that if you're a hardcore fan, you know about. But what strikes me about it is the access that Peyton Manning was afforded. You know, interviewing Virginia McCaskey at Wrigley Field, getting Mike Ditka on a boat in Chicago. And then you realize, well, this is really a concerted effort from the league also, because NFL Films has a big part in this, and it's all a part of their 100th anniversary celebration throughout the year. And then it makes a lot of sense what's going on.
No telling how many millions of dollars they paid Peyton, who got to fly around on a private jet with a crew filming this thing over last year. And I'm a hardcore football fan. I have been since I was 8 years old in 1960. And there's a lot of things in there I don't know. And I can't wait to see. And I think you don't have to be a football fan to enjoy it. Like the thing about the Giants quarterback throwing the ball out of the building to try to generate publicity in the New York media because nobody paid any attention to the Giants. And he throws one to Running Hills with Jerry Rice. It's just, and wondering how in the world the Bears fit a team in the dressing room at Wrigley Field, which is now the groundskeeper's room, and especially when the roster increased to 40. They played at Wrigley Field until 1970 before they moved to Soldier Field. But I can't wait to see it, Chad. I think it's going to be one of the greatest things we've ever seen. I can't say TV because it's going to be on websites, but I can't wait.
Well, John, it's going to force me to get a subscription to ESPN Plus. I don't have one now. And I think a lot of people are going to be that way, too. It's going to get, I mean, that's why they're doing it, is to drive subscriptions to ESPN Plus. But I'm going to get ESPN Plus just for that show.
I agree 100%. Me, too.
So, John, Golden Tate, in an interview said that Matthew Stafford is the best quarterback he's ever played with over Russell Wilson. And he got me thinking about Matthew Stafford. If we underappreciate him because he's in Detroit, and then I got to thinking, well, how many players are underappreciated because they're in Detroit over the years with the ineptitude of that franchise?
Well, first of all, I don't buy that at all. Golden Tate is with Detroit. He's trying to pump up second-year coach and people getting him fired up for the season. Stafford has been real good, great a little bit, but not consistently great. 2 years he brought him from behind to win a bunch of games. It's not his fault that they've been inept in the front office as well as the coaching. But I don't think if you put a lie detector, hooked up a lie detector to Golden Tate and got him to say that, I think that thing would jump like crazy.
615-737-1045, 737-1045. John, what do you have going on at the Houston Chronicle as you guys get ready for the start of training camp?
Well, I've got Facebook Live. It's posted on TexasSportsNation.com, one of our websites. I've got podcasts. I've got a column from Sunday about the Texans secondary being a bigger issue than the offensive line because Deshaun Watson can bail out the offensive line. One more training camp story. My first camp, 1977. I go to my first dinner. They're trying to make a rookie sing. He won't sing. Jimmy Giles, a tight end, would not sing. A linebacker, Steve Kiner. Just because Giles wouldn't sing, those flying across two tables, food flying to fight him because he wouldn't sing. And eventually they asked me to sing. I wouldn't do it. And I remember two future general managers, one from the Titans, Mike Reinfeldt, Ted Thompson, throwing rolls at me because I wouldn't sing.
More stories like this coming up on Friday with John McClain, the very best.
Thursday.
That's right. Yeah, Thursday. Sorry, John. I appreciate you correcting me. At McClain underscore on underscore NFL on Twitter. John, thank you so much.
Cadillac, always a pleasure. Thank you. Look forward to Thursday.